still believe the rebel Pippa Spetsos is behind these killings?
The style is in line with what her Lightfall squad does to its victims. I think she's on Emil Renast's trail, and is torturing anyone who helped him on his way.
Is the boy here, then?
Considering the proximity of the latest site, I have good reason to believe he has arrived. An otter looped and twirled past the windows, a message clenched in his fangs, neon yellow vest glaringly bright in the cobalt blue.
And Sophie Renast?
The River Queen toyed with a pink and gold lily that brushed against her soft stomach, running her elegant fingers over its petals.
Any sightings of her?
Not a ripple. No need to mention Bryce and Athalar going to the Bone Quarter for answers. There was nothing to tell yet. He could only hope the two of them would emerge alive.
The Hind is here, in Lunathian. Do you believe she's also tracking Emil?
She's only arrived today. He'd gotten reports already that her wolves prowled the city, along with the Harpy. At least the Hawk, his spies said, had remained behind in Pangera, left to guard Ephraim's roost, apparently. Her whereabouts have been public for the last few days. She doesn't have a human scent, and also wasn't in the city to commit these murders. All signs point to Pippa Spetsos. The river spirit plucked the lily and tucked it behind her ear. It glowed as if lit by a kernel of first light.
Find that boy, Therian.
He bowed his head. What about Ophian Command? If they find out we have Emil?
Make sure they don't find out.
Her eyes darkened, and storms threatened. Lightning lashed the surface high above.
We are loyal to the House of Many Waters, first and foremost.
Why the boy? He finally dared ask. Why do you want him so badly?
You question me?
Only the Ocean Queen, Lady of Waters, daughter of Ogenis, had that right. Or the Asteri. Therian bowed. Lightning illuminated the surface again, and Therian's brows lowered. That wasn't his queen's power, and since the forecast hadn't called for storms. Therian bowed again. I apologize for the impertinence. Your will is mine, he said, the familiar words falling from his lips. I'll update you when I've apprehended the boy. He made to leave, risking doing so without dismissal, and had nearly made it to the archway before the River Queen said,
Did you enjoy your punishment last night?
He closed his eyes for a moment before he turned to face her. She'd lowered herself into the stream again, no more than a dark, beautiful head among the lily pads, like one of her sobeks, waiting to make a meal of the unworthy dead. Therian said, It was a wise and fitting punishment for my ignorance and transgression. Her lips curled upward, revealing slightly pointed white teeth.
It is diverting to see you tug at the leash, Therian.
He swallowed his retort, his rage, his grief, and inclined his head. More lightning. He had to go. Knew better than to reveal his impatience, though. I have only your daughter's best interests in my heart. Again, that ancient, cruel smile that informed him she'd seen too many males, some far smarter than he, come and go.
I suppose we shall see.
With that, she dipped beneath the water, vanishing under the lily pads and among the reeds. Hunt could barely stand. The first light had flayed him, leaving a smoking ruin inside his body, his mind. But it had worked. He'd taken the power and converted it into his own, whatever the fuck that meant. Apollyon had known, or guessed enough to be right. And Bryce, the sword. She'd been a conduit to his power. Fucking hell. They staggered through the mists, the obelisks. Screeching and hissing rose around them. Reapers. Would any place in Midgard be safe now, even after death? He sure as fuck didn't want his soul in the Bone Quarter. The bone gates appeared overhead, carved from the ribs of some ancient leviathan, and beyond them, the steps to the river. Hunt's knees nearly buckled as he spied a familiar wave skimmer, and the mare male atop it, beckoning frantically as he pivoted the wave skimmer toward Lunathian proper.
I thought that was you, with all the lightning,
Therian panted as they rushed toward him and leapt down the steps. He slipped off the wave skimmer to make room for them, shifting as he went. The mare looked like hell, haunted and tired and bleak. Bryce climbed on first, and Hunt joined her, clasping her from behind. She gunned the engine and sped off into the mist, Therian shooting under the surface beside them. Hunt nearly collapsed against her back, but Bryce veered to the left so sharply he had to clutch her hips to keep from falling into the water.
Fuck,
she shouted as scaly, muscled backs broke the surface. Sobex. Only the nutritious souls went to the Underking. The ones given over to the beasts were snacks, junk food. A broad snout full of thick, dagger-like fangs shot from the water. Blood sprayed before the creature could rip into Hunt's leg. Bryce zigged to the right, and Hunt twisted to see Therian on their tail, a deadly plume of water aimed above him, pressurized like a water cannon, so intense and brutal that it had carved a hole right through a Sobek's head. Another beast lunged for them, and again Therian struck, water-breaking flesh as surely as it could eat away at stone. A third, and Therian attacked with brutal efficiency. The other beasts halted, tails lashing the water. Hang on! Bryce shouted toward Therian, who gripped the side of the wave skimmer as she hurtled them toward the black dock. The mist fell away behind them, and a wall of sunshine blinded Hunt. They didn't stop, though, not when they hit the dock, not when Therian leapt from the water and shifted, grabbing a spare blue court aquatic uniform from the seat hatch in the wave skimmer. The three of them hurried down the streets to Bryce's apartment. In the safety of her home, Bryce knelt on the floor, wet and bloody and panting. The slice along her spine was long but mercifully shallow, already clotting. It had missed the horn tattoo by millimeters. Hunt had enough sanity remaining to avoid the white couch, as Therian said.
What happened? Any sign of Emil or Sophie?
No. We were stupid to even look for them in the bone quarter,
Hunt said, sitting at the dining table, trying to reel his mind back in. Bryce filled the mare in on the rest. When she finished, Therian dropped onto one of the counter stools, face white.
I know I should be disappointed that Emil and Sophie weren't hiding in the bone quarter, but that's what awaits us in the end.
Hunt opened his mouth, but Bryce asked,
Where's Rune? He and Ethan should be back.
Hunt narrowed his eyes.
Call them.
Bryce did, but neither answered. Hunt fished out his phone, grateful he'd gotten the water repellent spell Quinlan had needled him into purchasing. News alerts and messages filled the screen. Hunt said a shade hoarsely.
Ephraim just got here. With the hind.
Arian nodded grimly.
She brought her pack of dreadwolves with her.
Bryce checked the clock on her phone again.
I need to find Rune.
Chapter 33. Rune said nothing as the hind produced a deck of cards from the pocket of her imperial uniform. Ethan played the role of confused jock, alternating ignorance with bored distraction, as he watched the game above the bar. The hind shuffled the deck, cards cracking like breaking bones. On the table's fourth side, the harpy lounged in her seat and marked his every move. Her wings, a matte black, like they'd been built for stealth, spilled onto the floor. She wore the familiar battle suit of the 45th, Sandriel's former prized legion. The harpy, along with the hammer, had been one of its notoriously cruel leaders.
I don't believe we've met, the hind said, flexing and breaking the cards again.
Her hands were deft, unfaltering, unscarred. She wore a gold ring crowned with a square, clean-cut ruby, a subtle hint of wealth. Rune forced himself to smirk.
I'm flattered I was so high on your priority list today.
You're my half-sister's fiancé,
Are you not? A lifeless smile, the opposite of Hypaxia's warmth and wisdom. The Hind was only about 20 years older than her sister, 47 years old, far closer in age than most Vanir siblings. But they shared nothing in common, it seemed.
It would be rude not to introduce myself upon arrival. I already visited your father's villa. He informed me that you were here.
Cormac must have arrived right before the Hind to feed the lie to the Autumn King. Thank the gods. Rune snorted.
Nice to meet you. I'm busy.
The harpy's skin was as pale as the belly of a fish, set off by her jet-black hair and eyes. She said,
You're as impertinent as you appear, princeling.
Rune flicked his lip ring with his tongue.
I'd hate to disappoint.
The harpy's features contorted in anger, but the Hind said mildly,
We'll play poker, I think. Isn't that what you play on Tuesday nights?
Rune repressed his shiver of fear. The standing game wasn't a secret, but how much did she know about him? Ethan remained the portrait of boredom, gods bless him. So Rune said to the Hind,
All right, you're keeping tabs on me for your sister's sake.
Was it mere coincidence she'd sought him out now? What had Mordok told her about Ethan's whereabouts this morning? Rune asked the harpy,
But why the hell are you here?
The harpy's thin lips stretched into a grotesque smile. She reached a pale hand toward Ethan's muscled shoulder as she said,
I wanted to survey the goods.
Without looking at her, the wolf snatched her fingers, squeezing hard enough to show that he could break bone if he wished. Slowly, he turned, eyes brimming with hate.
You can look, but don't touch.
You break it, you buy it.
The harpy crooned, wriggling her fingers. She liked this, the edge of pain. Ethan bared his teeth in a feral grin and released her hand. The pup had balls, Rune would give him that. Ethan looked at the TV again, as he said, Pass. The harpy bristled, and Rune said,
He's a little young for you.
And what about you?
A killer's sharp smile. Rune leaned back in his chair, swigging from his whiskey.
I'm engaged. I don't fuck around.
The Hind dealt the cards with a swift, sure grace.
Except with fawns, of course.
Rune kept his face unmoved. How did she know about the female at the party? He met her golden eyes. A perfect match for the hammer in beauty and temperament. She hadn't been at the summit this spring, thank the gods. The harpy had been there, though, and Rune had done his damn best to stay away from her. The Hind scooped up her cards without breaking his stare.
I wonder if my sister shall learn of that.
Is this some sort of shakedown?
Rune fanned out his cards. A decent hand, not great, but he'd won with worse. The Hind's attention bobbed to her cards, then back to his face. This female had most likely killed Sophie Renast. A silver torque glinted at the base of her throat, like she'd killed and broken so many rebels that the collar of her uniform couldn't fit all the darts. Did the necklace grow with each new death she wrought? Would his own be marked on that collar? The Hind said,
Your father suggested I meet you. I agreed.
Rune suspected that his father hadn't just told her his location to provide an alibi, but also to warn him to keep the fuck out of trouble. Ethan picked up his cards, scanned them, and swore. The harpy said nothing as she examined her own hand. The Hind held Rune's gaze as the game began. She was the spitting image of Luna, with her upswept chignon, the regal angle of her neck and jaw, as coldly serene as the moon. All she needed was a pack of hunting hounds at her side, and she had them in her dreadwolves. How had someone so young risen in the ranks so swiftly, gained such notoriety and power? No wonder she left a trail of blood behind her.
Careful now,
the harpy said with that oily smile.
The hammer doesn't share.
The Hind's lips curved upward.
No, he doesn't.
As Ethan said, Rune drawled. Pass.
The harpy glowered, but the hind's smile remained in place.
Where is your famed sword, Prince?
With Bryce in the bone quarter. Left it at home this morning, Rune answered.
I heard you spent the night at your sister's apartment.
Rune shrugged. Was this interrogation merely to fuck with him, or did the hind know something? I didn't realize you had the authority to grill ox leaders in this city.
The authority of the Asteri extends over all, including starborn princes.
Rune caught the bartender's eye, signaling for another whiskey.
So, this is just to prove you've got bigger balls.
He draped an arm over the back of his chair, cards in one hand.
You want to head up the ox while you're in town? Fine, I could use a vacation.
The harpy's teeth flashed.
Someone should rip that tongue from your mouth. The Asteri would flay you for such disrespect.
Ethan drew another card and said mildly,
You've got some nerve coming to our city and trying to start shit.
The hind replied with equal calm,
So do you, lusting after the female your brother loved.
Rune blinked. Ethan's eyes turned dangerously dark.
You're full of shit.
Am I?
The hind said, drawing a card herself.
Of course, as my visit here will likely entail meeting the princess, I looked into her history, found quite a chain of messages between you two.
Rune thanked the bartender, as the male brought over a whiskey and then quickly retreated. Rune said into Ethan's mind,
She's trying to rile you. Ignore her.
Ethan didn't answer. He only said to the hind, voice sharpening,
Bryce is my friend.
The hind drew another card.
Years of pining in secret. Years of guilt and shame for feeling what he does. For hating his brother whenever he talks about Miss Quinlan. For wishing that he had been the one who'd met her first.
Shut up,
Ethan growled, rattling the glasses on the table. Pure feral wolf. The hind went on, unfazed.
Loving her, lusting for her from the sidelines, waiting for the day when she would realize that he was the one she was meant to be with. Playing his little heart out on the sunball field, hoping she'd notice him at last. But then, Big Brother dies.
Ethan paled. The hind's expression filled with cool contempt.
And he hates himself even more. Not only for losing his brother, for not being there, but because of the one traitorous thought he had after learning the news, that the path to Bryce Quinlan was now cleared. Did I get that part right?
Shut your fucking mouth,
Ethan growled, and the harpy laughed.
Calm down,
Rune warned the male, but the hind said,
Call.
Mind reeling, Rune laid out the decent hand he'd gotten. The harpy put hers down. Good, he'd beaten her. The hind gracefully spread hers across the table. A winning hand, beating Rune by a fraction. Ethan didn't bother to show his cards. He'd already shown them, Rune realized. The hind smiled again at Ethan.
You Valbarans are too easy to break.
Fuck you.
The hind rose, gathering her cards.
Well, this has been delightfully dull.
The harpy stood with her. Black talons glinted at the angel's fingertips.
Let's hope they fuck better than they play poker.
Rune crooned. I'm sure there are reapers who will stoop to fuck you. The hind snickered, earning a glare from the harpy that the deer shifter ignored. The harpy hissed at Rune.
I do not take being insulted lightly, princeling.
Get the hell out of my bar,
Rune snarled softly. She opened her mouth, but the hind said,
We'll see you soon, I'm sure.
The harpy understood that as a command to leave and stormed out the door onto the sunny street, where life somehow continued onward. The hind paused on the threshold before she left, though. peered over her shoulder at Rune, her silver necklace glinting in the sunlight trickling in, her eyes lit with unholy fire.
"Tell Prince Cormac I send my love," the Hind said.
Bryce was one breath away from calling the Autumn King when the door to the apartment opened, and apparently she looked a hell of a lot worse than her brother or Ethan, because they immediately demanded to know what had happened to her. Hunt, nursing a beer at the kitchen counter, said,
"Emile and Sophie aren't in the bone quarter, but we found out some major shit. You'd better sit down."
Yet Bryce went up to her brother, scanning him from the piercings along his ear to his tattooed arms and ass-kicking boots. Not one sleek black hair out of place, though his skin was ashen. Ethan, standing at his side, didn't give her the chance to turn to him before approaching the fridge and grabbing a beer of his own.
"You're all right?" Bryce asked Rune,
who was frowning at the dirt and blood on her. The wound on her back had thankfully closed, but was still tender. Therian said from where he sat on the couch, feet propped on the coffee table,
"Everyone is fine, Legs. Now let's sit down like a good little rebel family and tell each other what the hell happened."
Bryce swallowed.
"All right, yeah, sure."
She scanned Rune again, and his eyes softened.
"You scared the shit out of me."
"We couldn't answer our phones."
She didn't let herself reconsider before throwing her arms around her brother and squeezing tight. A heartbeat later, he gently hugged her back, and she could have sworn he shuddered in relief. Hunt's phone buzzed, and Bryce pulled away from Rune.
"Celestina wants me at the Comitium for Ephraim's arrival," Hunt said. "She wants her triari assembled."
"Oh, Ephraim's already here," Ethan dropped onto the couch. "We learned the hard way."
"You saw him?"
Bryce asked.
"His cronies," Ethan said, not looking at her. "Played poker with them and everything."
Bryce whirled on Rune. Her brother nodded gravely.
"The Hind and the Harpy showed up to the bar where we were lying low. I can't tell if it was because Mordok sniffed around the alley where Cormac made the intel drop or what. But it was not great."
"Do they know?"
Hunt asked quietly, storms in his eyes.
"About you? About us?"
"No idea," Rune said, toying with his lip ring. "I think we'd be dead if they did, though."
Hunt blew out a sigh.
"Yeah, you would be. They would have taken you in for questioning already."
"The Hind is a fucking monster," Ethan said, turning on the TV.
"Her and the Harpy both."
"I could have told you that,"
Hunt said, finishing his beer and striding to where Bryce stood before the glass dining table. She didn't stop him as he slid a hand over her jaw, cupping her cheek, and kissed her. Just a swift brush of their mouths, but it was a claiming and a promise.
"Rain check," he murmured onto her lips.
"Right, the dinner and the hotel." She frowned pitifully.
"Rain check."
He chuckled, but grew deadly serious.
"Be careful. I'll be back as soon as I can. Don't go looking for that kid without me."
He kissed her forehead before leaving the apartment. Bryce offered up silent prayers to Cathona and Urd to protect him.
"Glad you two finally sorted it out," Therian said from the couch.
Bryce flipped him off, but Rune sniffed her carefully.
"You smell different."
"She smells like the Istros," Ethan said from the couch.
"No, it's..."
Rune's brows twitched toward each other, and he scratched at the buzzed side of his head.
"I can't explain it."
"Stop sniffing me, Rune." Bryce hopped onto the couch on Therian's other side. "It's gross. Story time." Chapter 34.
"How do I look?"
Celestina whispered to Hunt as they stood in front of the desk in her private study. Isaiah flanked her other side, Naomi to his left, Baxian to Hunt's right. Baxian had barely done more than nod to Hunt when he'd entered. Hunt had taken the flight over here to soothe his nerves, his residual rage and awe at what he and Bryce had done, what they'd learned. By the time he'd alighted on the landing veranda, his face had become impassive once more, the mask of the Umbra Mortis. It cracked a little, however, upon seeing Pollux a step away from Naomi, grinning with feral, anticipatory delight. This was a reunion from hell. The Hind and the Hammer back together once more. Never mind the Harpy and the Hellhound. Things had always revolved around Pollux and Lydia, their twin shriveled souls, and no one else. Thank the gods the Hawk had stayed behind in Pangera. Hunt murmured to Celestina,
"You look like a female about to enter an arranged mating."
He was amazed his words had come out so casually, considering how his morning had gone. The Archangel, clad in dawn soft pink, gold at her wrists and ears, threw him a sad, "What can you do?" kind of smile. Hunt, despite himself, added,
"But you do look beautiful."
Her smile gentled, light brown eyes with them.
"Thank you, and thank you for coming in on your day off."
She squeezed his hand, her fingers surprisingly clammy. She was truly nervous. Down the hall, the elevator doors pinged. Celestina's fingers tightened on Hunt's before letting go. He could have sworn hers were shaking. So Hunt said,
"It's no problem at all. I'll be right here all night. You need to bail? Just give me a signal. Tug on your earring, maybe, and I'll make up some excuse."
Celestina smiled up at him, squaring her shoulders.
"You're a good male, Hunt."
He wasn't so sure of that. Wasn't so sure he hadn't offered only to make her like him so that when shit hit the fan, if Baxian or the Hind or anyone suggested he and Quinlan were up to anything shady, she'd give him the benefit of the doubt. But he thanked her all the same. The meeting between Ephraim and Celestina was as stiff and awkward as Hunt had expected. Ephraim was handsome, as so many of the archangels were. Black hair cut close to his head in a warrior-like fashion, light brown skin that radiated health and vitality, and dark eyes that noted every person in the room, like a soldier assessing a battlefield. But his smile was genuine as he looked upon Celestina, who strode toward him with outstretched hands.
"My friend," she said, peering up into his face, as if seeing it for the first time.
Ephraim smiled, white teeth straight and perfect.
"My mate."
She ducked her head right at the moment he went in to kiss her cheek, and Hunt reined in his cringe as Ephraim's lips met the side of her head. Celestina jolted back, realizing the miscommunication, that people were witnessing this, and Isaiah, gods bless him, stepped forward, a fist on his heart.
"Your Grace, I welcome you and your triari."
Ephraim had only brought Sandriel's triari with him, Hunt realized, had left his original members back in Pangera with the Hawk. Ephraim recovered from the awkward kiss and tucked his blindingly white wings close to his toned, powerful body.
"I thank you for your welcome, Commander Tiberian, and hope that your triari will welcome mine, as you so warmly did."
Hunt at last glanced at the Hind, standing a few feet behind Ephraim, and then at Pollux, staring at her with wolfish intensity from across the room. The Hind's golden eyes simmered, focused wholly on her lover, as if she were waiting for the go-ahead to jump his bones.
"Yuck," Naomi muttered, and Hunt suppressed his smile.
Celestina seemed to be searching for something to say, so Hunt spared her and said,
"We shall treat your triari as our brothers and sisters."
The harpy sneered at the last word. Hunt's lightning sparked in answer.
"For however long they remain here."
"For however long I let you live, you fucking psychopath."
Celestina recovered enough to say,
"Their alliance shall be only one of the many successes for our mating."
Ephraim voiced his agreement, even as he raked his stare over his mate once more. Approval shone there, but Celestina, her throat bobbed. She'd been with a male, hadn't she? Come to think of it, Hunt didn't even know if she preferred males. Had the Asteri considered that? Would they care what her preferences were? What her experience was before throwing her into bed with Ephraim? Baxian's eyes remained on the harpy and the hind, cold and watchful. He didn't seem particularly pleased to see them.
I have some refreshments prepared, Celestina said, gesturing to the tables against the wall of windows. Come, let us drink to this happy occasion.
Bryce had just finished telling Rune and Ethan what had gone down in the bone quarter, both of them looking as sick as Therian had to hear about the real fate of the dead, when someone knocked on the door.
So, Connor, Ethan was saying, rubbing his face. He's... They fed his soul into the gate to become first light, second light, whatever.
Bryce wrung her hands.
It seems like they'd wait until we're all dust, and even our descendants have forgotten him. But considering how much we pissed off the Underking, I feel like there's a chance he might...
Move Connor up the list.
I need to know, Ethan said. I need to fucking know.
Bryce's throat ached.
I do too. We'll try to find out.
Therian asked, but what can be done to help him? Any of them? Silence fell. The knock on the door came again, and Bryce sighed.
We'll figure that out too.
Rune toyed with one of the hoops through his left ear. Is there someone we should tell? Bryce unlocked the door.
The Asteri undoubtedly know about it and don't care. They'll say it's our civic duty to give back whatever power we can.
Ethan shook his head, looking toward the window. Rune said,
We have to think carefully about this. Was the Prince of the Pit pushing you and Athalar to go there by sending those Reapers? Or by having his Reapers hint that Emil and Sophie might be hiding there?
Why?
To activate your combined powers with that gate trick?
He couldn't have known that would happen.
We have to think about how the Asteri would retaliate if this is something they want kept under wraps, and what they'd do if we do indeed find and harbor Emil and Sophie.
We'll game it out, Bryce said,
and finally opened the door. A hand locked around her throat, crushing the air from her.
You little cunt,
Sabine Fendir hissed. Rune should have considered who might need to knock on the front door. Instead, he'd been so focused on the truth Bryce had revealed about their lives and afterlives that he'd let her open it without checking. Sabine hurled Bryce across the room, hard enough that she slammed into the side of the sectional, scooting the behemoth couch back by an inch. Rune was up instantly, gun aimed at the Alpha. Behind him, Therian helped Bryce to her feet. Sabine's attention remained fixed on Bryce as she said,
What game are you playing, princess?
That title was clearly what had kept Sabine from ripping out Bryce's throat. Bryce's brows lowered, but Ethan stepped to Rune's side, violence gleaming in his eyes.
What the hell are you talking about?
Sabine bristled, but she didn't remove her focus from Bryce as she continued.
You just can't stay out of wolf business, can you?
Bryce said coolly.
Wolf business?
Sabine pointed a clawed finger toward Ethan.
He was exiled, and yet you decided to harbor him. No doubt part of some plan of yours to rob me of my birthright.
So the big bad wolf came all the way here to yell at me about it?
The big bad wolf, Sabine seethed, came all the way here to remind you that no matter what my father might have said, you are no wolf.
She sneered at Ethan, and neither is he, so stay the fuck out of our wolf affairs. Ethan let out a low growl, but pain seemed to ripple beneath it. Rune snarled,
You want to talk, Sabine? Then sit the fuck down like an adult.
At his side, he was vaguely aware of Bryce thumbing in a message on her phone. Ethan squared his shoulders.
Bryce isn't harboring me. Perry dropped me here.
Perry's a moon-eyed fool, Sabine spat.
Bryce angled her head, though.
What about this arrangement exactly bothers you, Sabine?
The way her voice had iced over. Fuck, she sounded exactly like their father. Ethan said,
Bryce had nothing to do with you and me, Sabine. Leave her out of it.
Sabine pivoted toward him, bristling.
You're a disgrace and a traitor, Holstrom. A spineless waste if this is the company you choose to keep. Your brother would be ashamed.
Ethan snapped. My brother would tell me good fucking riddance to you. Sabine snarled, the sound pure command.
You might be exiled, but you still obey me.
Ethan shuddered, but refused to back down. Therian stepped forward. You want to throw down with Holstrom, Sabine? Go ahead. I'll stand as witness. Ethan would lose, and Sabine would gut him so thoroughly there would be no hope of recovery. He'd wind up with his brother, his soul served up to the Underking and the dead gate on a silver platter. Rune braced himself and realized he had no idea what to do. Celestina should have laid out some hard alcohol rather than rosé. Hunt wasn't nearly drunk enough to deal with having to keep smiling in a room full of his enemies, to deal with watching two people who had no choice but to make an arranged mating work somehow. They wouldn't officially be mated until the party next month, but their life together was already beginning. Beside him, at the doors to the private veranda off Celestina's study, Isaiah knocked back his pale pink wine and muttered, What a clusterfuck. I feel bad for her, Naomi said on Isaiah's other side. Hunt grunted his agreement, watching Celestina and Ephraim attempt to make small talk across the room. Beyond them, the harpy seemed content to sneer at Hunt the whole night. Baxian lurked by the door to the hall. Pollux and Lydia talked near the harpy with bent heads. Naomi followed the direction of his gaze. There's a terrifying match. Hunt chuckled. Yeah. His phone buzzed, and he fished it out of his pocket to see that a text had arrived from Bryce sucks my dick like a champ. Hunt choked, scrambling to switch screens as Isaiah peered over his shoulder and laughed. I assume you didn't put that name in there?
No,
Hunt hissed. He'd punish her thoroughly for that one. After he finally got to fuck her, he hadn't forgotten that he was supposed to be doing exactly that right now. That he'd made dinner and hotel reservations that had been canceled for this awkward-ass shit. Hunt explained to Isaiah. It's this stupid running joke we have.
A joke, hmm?
Isaiah's eyes danced with delight, and he clapped Hunt on the shoulder. I'm happy for you. Hunt smiled to himself, opening up her message, trying not to look at the name she'd put in and think about how accurate it was. Thanks. But his smile faded as he read the message. Sabine here. Hunt's heartbeat kicked up a notch. Isaiah read the message and murmured,
Go. What about this?
Hunt jerked his chin at Celestina and Ephraim across the room.
Go,
Isaiah urged.
You need backup?
He shouldn't, but Bryce's message had been so vague and...
Shit. You can't come with me. It'll be too obvious.
He turned to Naomi, but she'd drifted off toward the bar cart again. If he grabbed her, it'd draw everyone's attention. He scanned the space. Baxian looked right at him, reading the tension on his face, his body.
Fucker.
Now someone would know he'd left. Isaiah sensed it, noted it.
I'll deal with that,
his friend murmured, and sauntered off toward the black-winged angel. He said something to Baxian that had them both pivoting away from Hunt. Seizing his chance, Hunt backed up a step, then another, fading into the shadows of the veranda beyond the study. He kept moving, stealthy, until his heels were at the edge of the landing. But as he stepped off, free-falling into the night, he caught Celestina looking at him. Disappointment and displeasure darkened her eyes. Chapter 35. Bryce cursed herself for opening the door, for letting the wolf in, for letting it get to this so quickly. Ethan and Sabine about to splatter this apartment with blood. Ethan's blood. Bryce's mouth dried out. Think. Think. Rune swiftly glanced at her, but didn't suggest any bright ideas mind to mind. Sabine snarled at Ethan.
Your brother knew his place, was content to be Danica's second. You're not nearly as smart as he was.
Ethan didn't back down as Sabine advanced.
I might not be as smart as Connor, he said, but at least I wasn't dumb enough to sleep with Mordok.
Sabine halted.
Shut your mouth, boy.
Ethan laughed, cold and lifeless. Bryce had never heard him make such a sound.
We never learned during that last visit. Was it an arranged pairing between you two, or some drunk decision?
Mordok? The Hind's captain?
I will rip your throat out, Sabine growled, stepping closer.
But Bryce saw it, the glimmer of surprise. Doubt. He'd thrown Sabine off her game a little with that volley. Again, Ethan didn't lower his eyes.
He's here in this city. Are you going to see him? Take him to the Black Dock to bid farewell to his daughter?
Bryce's stomach dropped, but she kept her face neutral. Danica had never said, had always claimed it was a male not worth knowing or remembering. Bryce had assumed it was some lesser wolf, some male too submissive to keep Sabine's interest, and Sabine had refused to let Danica see him because of it. Even when Danica had known the truth of Bryce's parentage, she'd never told Bryce about her own lineage. The thought burned like acid.
Sabine spat. I know what you're trying to do, Holstrom, and it won't work.
Ethan flexed his broad chest. Bryce had seen that same intense expression while facing off against opponents on the sunball field. Ethan had usually been the one to walk away from the encounter, and he'd always walked away if a teammate joined in the fight. So Bryce stepped up, said to Sabine,
Was Danica a rebel?
Sabine whipped her head to her.
What?
Bryce kept her shoulders back, head high. She outranked Sabine in position and power now, she reminded herself.
Did Danica have contact with the Ophian rebels?
Sabine backed away, just one step.
Why would you ever ask that?
Ethan ignored the question and countered,
Was it because of Mordok? She was so disgusted by him that she helped the rebels to spite him.
Bryce shoved from the other side.
Maybe she did it out of disgust for you, too.
Sabine backed away one more step, predator turning into prey. She snarled,
You're both delusional.
Is that so?
Bryce asked, and then took a stab in the dark.
I'm not the one who ran all the way here to make sure Ethan and I weren't plotting some kind of wolf coup against you.
Sabine bristled. Bryce pushed, getting no small delight out of it.
That's the fear, right?
That I'm going to use my fancy princess title to get Holstrom to replace you somehow? I mean, you've got no heir beyond Amelie right now.
And Ethan's as dominant as she is.
But I don't think the Den likes Amelie.
Or you, for that matter, nearly as much as they love him. Ethan blinked at her in surprise. But Bryce smiled at Sabine, who'd gone stone-faced as she snarled.
Stay out of wolf business.
Bryce taunted. I wonder how hard it would be to convince the Prime and the Den that Ethan is the bright future of the Valbaran wolves.
Bryce,
Ethan warned. Had he truly never considered such a thing? Sabine's hand drifted to something at her back, and Rune aimed his gun.
Nah,
Bryce's brother said, smiling wickedly.
I don't think so.
A familiar ripple of charged air filled the room, a moment before Hunt said,
Neither do I,
and appeared in the doorway so silently Bryce knew he'd crept up. Relief nearly buckled her knees as Hunt stepped into the apartment, gun pointed at the back of Sabine's head.
You're going to leave, and never fucking bother us again.
Sabine seethed.
Allow me to give you a bit of advice. You tangle with Mordok, and you'll get what's coming to you. Ask him about Danica, and see what he does to get answers out of you.
Ethan's teeth flashed.
Get out, Sabine.
You don't give me orders.
The wolves faced off, one young and broken-hearted, the other in her prime and heartless. Could someone like Ethan, if he wanted it, ever win in a battle for dominance? But then another figure stepped into the apartment behind Hunt. Baxian. The angel shifter had a gun drawn, aimed at Sabine's legs to disable her if she tried to run. Only a glimmer of surprise on Hunt's face told Bryce this wasn't a planned appearance. Sabine turned slowly. Recognition flared in her eyes, and something like fear. Baxian's teeth gleamed in a feral grin.
Hello, Sabine.
Sabine simmered with rage, but hissed, "You're all carrion," and stormed from the apartment.
You all right?
Hunt asked Bryce as he looked her over. The redness around her throat was fading before his eyes. Bryce scowled.
I could have done without being hurled into the side of the couch.
Baxian, still by the door, huffed a laugh. Hunt turned toward him, lightning at the ready.
You got nothing better to do with your time than follow me around?
It seemed like you had an emergency, Baxian retorted.
I figured you might need backup,
especially considering where you were this morning.
A slash of a smile.
I worried something and followed you back across the Istros.
Hunt clenched his jaw hard enough to hurt.
What about Isaiah?
You mean his pathetic distraction attempt?
Baxian snorted. Before Hunt could reply, Ethan asked the Hellhound,
You know Sabine?
Baxian's face darkened.
In passing.
From the way Sabine had acted, there was definitely more to it than that. But Bryce suddenly asked Ethan,
Mordok is...
was.
He's Danica's father?
Ethan gazed at his feet.
Yeah.
As in the male who sired her, like gave her his genetic material. Ethan's eyes blazed.
Yeah.
And no one thought to fucking tell me?
I only knew because he visited the den once, a year before we met you. She got her bloodhound gift from him. It was her secret to keep, but now that she's gone...
Why wouldn't she tell me?
Bryce rubbed at her chest. Hunt took her hand, brushed his thumb over her knuckles.
Would you want that asshole for a father?
Hunt asked.
I have an asshole father already, Bryce said,
and Rune grunted his agreement.
I'd have understood.
Hunt squeezed her hand in gentle reassurance.
I don't know why she didn't say anything to you.
Ethan dropped onto the couch and ran his hands through his hair.
Danica would have become my alpha one day, and Sabine ruler of us all. So if they wanted it kept quiet, I had no choice.
Until Sabine had exiled him, freeing Ethan from those restrictions.
Would you have taken Sabine down just now?
Therian asked.
I might have tried, Ethan admitted.
Hunt whistled, but it was Baxian who said,
You wouldn't have won tonight.
Ethan growled.
Did I ask for your opinion, dog?
Hunt glanced between them. Interesting that Ethan saw him as a dog, not an angel. His animal form took precedence for another shifter, apparently. Baxian growled right back.
I said you wouldn't have won tonight. But another day, give yourself a few more years, pup, and maybe. And you're an expert in such things?
Ethan was still itching for a fight. Perhaps Baxian was about to give him one, sensing his need for it. Baxian's wings tucked in, definitely primed for a fight. Bryce massaged her temples.
Go to the gym or the roof if you're going to brawl, please. I can't afford to lose any more furniture.
She scowled at Ethan at that. Hunt snickered.
We'll get through the mourning process together, Quinlan. Have a proper send-off for the coffee table. Holstrom should give the eulogy, since he broke it.
His phone buzzed, and he checked it to find Isaiah's message.
All okay?
He wrote back.
Yeah. You?
She's upset you left. Didn't say anything, but I can tell.
Baxian bailed, too.
Fuck.
He replied.
Tell her it was an emergency, and that Baxian needed to help me.
He trailed you?
Just busting my balls,
Hunt lied.
All right, be careful.
Ethan said to Rune,
I'm accepting your offer.
Hunt's brows twitched toward each other. Bryce asked, What offer? Rune sized her up before saying,
"To come live with me and the guys, because of your thin-ass walls."
Therian said with mock outrage,
"I had dibs on the pup as my friend."
"Sorry for sexiling you, Ethan," Bryce muttered. Hunt laughed, but Ethan didn't. He didn't look at Bryce at all. Weird. Rune said to Ethan,
"All right. You fighting that asshole first, or can we go?"
He nodded to Baxian. Hunt kept perfectly still, ready to either intervene or referee. Ethan surveyed the angel with that athletic precision and focus. Baxian only smiled at him in invitation. How many times had Hunt seen that expression on the hellhound's face before he ripped into someone? But Ethan wisely shook his head.
"Another time."
3 minutes later, Ethan was stepping into the hallway with Rune and Therian, who had to go report to his queen once more.
"Ethan?"
Bryce said before he could leave. From the kitchen, Hunt watched her take a step into the hall, then halt, as if catching herself.
"We made a good team."
From his angle, Hunt couldn't see Ethan's face, but he heard the quiet,
"Yeah,"
right before the elevator doors dinged. Then,
"We did."
For all the world, Hunt could have sworn the wolf sounded sad. A moment later, Bryce walked back into the apartment and aimed right for Hunt, looking like she'd drop into his arms with exhaustion. She drew up short upon seeing Baxian. "Enjoying the view?" Baxian stopped his surveying.
"Nice place. Why'd Sabine come here?"
Bryce examined her nails. "She was pissed that I've been harboring Ethan after she kicked his ass to the curb."
"You know about her and Mordok, though?"
It wasn't exactly a question.
"You know?" Hunt asked.
Baxian shrugged one shoulder.
"I've spent years with the Hind and those who serve her. I've picked up a few interesting details."
"What happened when Mordok visited Danica?" Bryce asked.
"It didn't go well. He came back to Sandriel's castle,"
Baxian said to Hunt.
"Remember the time he ate that human couple?"
Bryce choked.
"He what?"
Hunt said roughly.
"Yeah. That was when he'd returned from the visit to the den,"
Baxian explained.
"He was in such a rage that he went out and killed a human couple he found on the street. Started eating the female while the male was still alive and begging for mercy."
"Burning fucking solace,"
Bryce breathed, her hand finding Hunt's.
"Sabine was right to warn you away from him,"
Baxian said, aiming for the door. Hunt grunted.
"I never thought he'd be in this city." "Let's hope he's gone soon, then,"
Baxian said, not looking back. Bryce said, hand sliding from Hunt's,
"Why did you come here, Baxian?"
The angel shifter halted.
"Athalar seemed like he needed help. We're partners, after all."
His grin was savage, mocking.
"And watching Celestina and Ephraim pretend to be into each other was too torturous, even for me."
Bryce was having none of it, though. "You were also at the Black Dock this morning."
"Are you asking if I'm spying on you?"
"Either that, or you desperately want in on the Cool Kids Club."
"A good spy would tell you no and say you were being paranoid."
"But you're not a good spy?"
"I'm not a spy at all, and you're being paranoid."
Bryce rolled her eyes, and Hunt smiled to himself as she walked to the door, making to shut it behind Baxian. As she closed the door, he heard her say to the hellhound,
"You're going to fit right in around here."
"Why'd you say that to him?"
Hunt asked as he slumped onto the bed beside her later that night. Bryce rested her head on Hunt's shoulder.
"Say what?"
"That thing to Baxian about fitting in."
"Jealous?"
"I just..."
His chest heaved as he sighed.
"He's a bad male."
"I know. Don't think too much about my nonsense, Hunt."
"No, it's not that. It's... he's a bad male. I know he is. But I was no better than him."
She touched his cheek.
"You're a good person, Hunt."
She'd assured him of that so many times now.
"I told Celestina I'd have her back with Ephraim and then bailed. Good people don't do that."
You bailed to come rescue your mate from the big bad wolf.
He flicked her nose, shifting onto his side, wings a wall of gray behind him.
I can't believe Mordok is Danica's father.
I can't believe our souls get turned into first light food, she countered. Or that the Hind brought her dreadwolves here. Or that the Underking is a fucking psychopath.
Hunt's laugh rumbled through her.
Rough day.
What do you think happened in the Bone Quarter, with your lightning and the first light and everything?
What were you even thinking, jumping in front of my lightning?
It worked, didn't it?
He glared.
You know that scar on Baxian's neck? I did that to him, with my lightning. With a blow a fraction of what I unleashed on the Star Sword.
Yeah, you're the tough, smart male who knows best, and I'm an impulsive female whose feelings get her in trouble.
For fuck's sake, Quinlan.
She propped her head on a hand.
So, you had no idea you could do that? Take the energy from the dead gate and transform it into lightning and all that?
No. It never occurred to me to channel anything into my lightning, until the Prince of the Pit suggested it the other night. But it made sense. You took the power out of the Heartgate this spring, and Sophie Renast as a Thunderbird could do something similar, so even if the push came from the Prince of the Pit, trying it out seemed like a good alternative to being eaten.
You went, she wiggled her fingers in the air, all lightning berserker.
He kissed her brow, running a hand down her hip.
I get a little hysterical when your safety is involved.
She kissed the tip of his nose. Such an alpha hole. But she flopped back on the bed, tucking her arms under her head.
You think there actually is a resting place for our souls?
She sighed at the ceiling. Like, if we died and didn't go to those places, what would happen?
Ghosts?
She scowled. You're not helping. He chuckled, tucking his hands behind his own head. She crossed her ankle over his shin, and they lay there in silence, staring at the ceiling. He said after a while,
You traded your resting place in the Bone Quarter for Danica's.
Given what happens to everyone over there, I feel kind of relieved about that now.
Yeah.
He took one of her hands in his and laid their interlaced fingers atop his heart.
But wherever you're headed when this life is over, Quinlan, that's where I want to be, too.
Chapter 36. The bridge was blissfully quiet compared to the absolute insanity of Rune's day. He'd brought Holstrom back to his place, where Flynn and Deck had been gobbling down 5 pizzas between the two of them. The former had arched a brow at Rune's announcement that the 4th bedroom, a disgusting heap of crap thanks to years of throwing their messes in there before parties, was now Ethan's. He'd have the couch tonight, and tomorrow they'd clean out all the shit. Declan had only shrugged and tossed Ethan a beer, then pulled his laptop over, presumably to continue combing through the gallery footage. Flynn had eyed the wolf, but shrugged as well. The message was clear enough. Yeah, Holstrom was a wolf, but so long as he didn't mouth off about Fay, they'd get along just fine. And a wolf was always better than an angel. Guys were simple like that. Easy. Not like the female burning across from him on the bridge.
Hey, Day.
He wished he had some place to sit, for one fucking moment. He was technically sleeping, he supposed, but... Well, damn. A deep cushioned armchair appeared a foot away. He slumped into it and sighed. Perfect. Her snort rippled toward him, and another chair appeared. A red velvet fainting couch.
Fancy,
he said as Day draped herself over it. She looked so much like Lahaba that his chest ached.
Seeing me like this causes you distress.
No,
he said, puzzled as to how she'd read his emotions when night and stars covered his features.
No, it's... I lost a friend a few months ago. She loved to sit on a couch like that one. She was a fire sprite, so your whole fire thing struck a little close to home.
She angled her head, flame shifting with her.
How did she die?
He checked himself before he could reveal too much.
It's a long story.
but she died saving my... someone I love.
Then her death was noble.
I should have been there.
Rune leaned back against the cushions and gazed toward the endless black above them.
She didn't need to make that sacrifice.
You would have traded your life for a fire sprite's?
There was no condescension in the question, merely bald curiosity.
Yeah, I would have.
He lowered his stare back to her.
Anyway, we made the intel drop-off. Nearly got caught, but we did it.
She straightened slightly.
By whom?
Mordok, the Hind, the Harpy.
She stilled. Her fire guttered to that violent blue.
They are lethal. If you're caught, you will be lucky to just be killed.
Rune crossed an ankle over a knee.
Believe me, I know that.
Mordok is a monster.
So's the Hind, and the Harpy.
They're all... Where are you now?
He hesitated, then said,
In Lunathian. Might as well tell you, you could have turned on the news and figured out where they are.
She shook her head, flame flowing.
You say too much.
And you too little.
Any other intel about the shipment on the spine?
No. I thought you called me here to tell me something.
No, I guess my mind reached for yours.
She watched him, and even though he couldn't see her face, and she couldn't see his, he'd never felt so naked. She said quietly,
Something's riled you.
How could she tell?
My day was difficult.
She sighed. Tendrils of fire rippled around her.
Mine too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The word was teasing, a reminder of their earlier conversation. She did have a sense of humor then. Day said,
I work with people who are... Well, they make Mordok seem like one of those sweet little otters in your city. There are days when it wears on me more than others. Today was one of them.
Do you at least have friends to lean on? He asked.
No. I've never had a true friend in my life.
He winced.
That's really sad.
She snorted.
It is, isn't it?
I don't think I'd have made it this far without my friends, or my sister.
For those of us with neither friends nor family, we find ways to make do.
No family, eh? A true lone wolf.
He added,
My father's a piece of shit, so a lot of the time I wish I were like you.
I have a family. A very influential one.
She propped her head on a burning fist.
They're pieces of shit, too.
Yeah? Your dad ever burn you for speaking out of turn?
No, but he did flog me for sneezing during prayers.
She wasn't an Asteri then. Asteri had no family, no children, no parents. They just were.
He blinked. All right, we're even.
She laughed quietly, a low, soft sound that ran delicate fingers over his skin.
A truly tragic thing to have in common.
It really is.
He smiled, even if she couldn't see it. She said,
Since you are in a position of power, I'm assuming your father must be as well.
Why can't I be self-made?
Call it intuition.
He shrugged.
All right, what about it?
Does he know of your rebel sympathies?
I think my work has gone beyond sympathies now, but no. He'd kill me if he knew.
Yet you risk your life.
What's the question, Day?
Her mouth quirked to the side, or what he could see of it did.
You could use your power and rank to undermine people like your father, you know. Be a secret agent for the rebellion in that sense, rather than doing this message-carrying.
She didn't know who he was, right? Rune shifted in his chair.
Honestly, I'm shit at those deception games. My father is the master of them. This is far more my speed.
And yet your father is allowed to stay in power?
Yeah. Aren't all of these assholes allowed to stay in power? Who's going to stop them?
Us. People like us. One day.
Rune snorted.
That's some idealistic shit right there.
You know that if this rebellion is triumphant, we'll likely have a war for dominance between all the houses, don't you?
Not if we play the game well.
Her tone was completely serious. Why tell me any of this? I thought you were all no personal stuff.
Let's chalk it up to a difficult day.
All right, he repeated. He leaned back in his chair once more, letting himself fall quiet. To his surprise, Day did the same. They sat in silence for long minutes before she said,
You're the first person I've spoken to normally in a very long time.
How long?
So long that I think I've forgotten what it feels like to be myself. I think I've lost my true self entirely. To destroy monsters, we become monsters. Isn't that what they say?
Next time, I'll bring us some psychic beers and a TV. We'll get you normal again. She laughed, the sound like clear bells. Something male and primal in him sat up at the sound.
I've only ever had wine.
He started. That's not possible.
Beer wasn't deemed appropriate for a female of my position. I did have a sip once I was old enough to not answer to my family. But I found it wasn't to my liking anyway.
He shook his head in mock horror. Come visit me in Lunathian sometime, Day. I'll show you a good time.
Given who is present in your city, I think I'll decline.
He frowned. Right. She seemed to remember, too, and why they were here.
Is it confirmed where the rebels are making the strike on the spine shipment?
Not sure. I'm the go-between, remember?
You told them what I said about the Asteri's new mech suit prototype.
Yeah.
Don't forget that it's the most valuable thing on that train. Leave the rest.
Why not blow up the entire spine and break their supply lines?
Her fire sizzled. We've tried multiple times. With each attempt, we've been thwarted, either by betrayal or things simply going wrong. An attack like that requires a lot of people and a lot of secrecy and precision. Do you know how to make explosives?
No. But there's always magic to do that.
Remember that the rebellion is mostly humans, and their Vanir allies like to remain hidden. We are dependent on human resourcefulness and abilities. Simply compiling enough explosives to enact a serious hit on the spine takes a great deal of effort, especially considering the great losses Ophion has taken to its numbers lately. They're on the ropes,
she added, oozing disgust.
This isn't a video game.
Rune growled. I'm aware of that. Her flame banked a fraction.
You're right. I spoke out of turn.
You can just say I'm sorry. No need for the fancy talk. Another soft laugh.
Bad habit.
He saluted her. Well, until next time, Day. He half hoped she'd counter with something to keep them talking, keep him here. But Day and her couch faded into embers drifting on a phantom wind.
Goodbye, night.
Ethan Holstrom had never been inside a full-fledged Fae's house. There'd only been two Fae males on his CCU Sunball team, and both were from cities across the territory, so he'd never had the chance to go to their homes and meet their families. But Prince Rune's house was cool. It reminded him of the apartment Connor and Bronson and Thorne once had. A few blocks from here, actually. Crappy old furniture, stained walls with posters of sports teams taped on them, an overly large TV, and a fully stocked bar. He hadn't minded crashing on the couch last night, would have slept on the porch, if it meant being far away from where Bryce and Hunt slept together. The clock beneath the TV read 7 a.m. when Ethan rose and showered. He helped himself to Tristan Flynn's array of fancy shampoos and body products, all marked Flynn's. Do not touch, Rune. I mean it this time. Rune had written beneath the scribbling on one of the bottles, No one likes your weird shampoo anyway. Flynn had scrawled right along the bottom edge of the bottle. Then why is it nearly empty? And why is your hair so shiny, asshole? Ethan had snickered. Even as his heart squeezed, he'd had that kind of dynamic once with his brother. His brother,
who was either already turned into Second Light or on his way there. The thought had any rising interest in breakfast melting into nausea. By the time Ethan had dressed and gone downstairs, the three fey males who lived in the house were still asleep. He'd raised his phone to his ear.
Hey, this is Therian. If you can't get me, send an otter.
All right, then. An hour later, after a quick check of the program scanning the gallery footage for Danica, Ethan had headed for the Istros, grabbing an iced coffee on his way. He suppressed a smile as he handed over a silver mark to a whiskery otter, whose name tag on his yellow vest said Fitzroy. Ethan parked his ass on a bench beside the Istros and stared across the river. He'd wanted to fight Sabine last night, had actually contemplated how her blood would taste when he ripped out her throat with his teeth. But the hellhound's words lingered. Connor had been an alpha who'd accepted the role of second because he'd believed in Danica's potential. Ethan had fallen in with Amelie's pack because he'd had nowhere else to go. But last night, just for a moment, when Bryce had stepped up and the two of them had Sabine backing away, he'd remembered what it had been like to not only be a wolf in a pack, but a player on a team, working in unison, as if they were one mind, one soul. Never mind that he'd once thought of himself and Bryce that way. The fucking hind could go to hell. He had no idea how she'd pieced that together, but he'd kill her if she ever mentioned it to anyone again, especially Bryce. It was no one's business but his, and it was ancient history now anyway. He'd had 2 years without Bryce to sort his shit out, and being near her again had been hard. But he'd never told anyone about his feelings before Connor died, and he sure as hell wasn't going to start now. The hind had been right, though. He'd walked into Connor's dorm that day early in his brother's freshman year at CCU, intending to meet the awesome, gorgeous, hilarious hallmate Con talked about endlessly. And on his way down the dingy, carpeted hall, he'd run into, well, an awesome, gorgeous, hilarious hallmate. He'd been struck stupid. She was the hottest person he'd ever seen, no joke. Her smile had warmed some god's forsaken place in Ethan's chest that had been icy and dark since his parents had died, and those whiskey eyes had seemed to see him. Him, not the sunball player, not the star athlete or anything like that. Just him, Ethan. They spoke for 10 minutes in the hall without exchanging names. He'd just been Connor's little brother, and she hadn't given her name and he'd forgotten to ask for it. But by the time Connor poked his head into the hall, Ethan had decided he was going to marry her. He'd attend CCU, play sunball for them and not Corinth U, who'd already been wooing him, and he'd find this girl and marry her. He suspected they might even be mates if he was right about that gut tug toward her. And that would be that. Then Connor had said,
"Looks like you met Ethan already, Bryce."
And Ethan had wanted to dissolve into that disgusting dorm carpet. He knew it was fucking stupid. He'd spoken to Bryce for 10 minutes before finding out she was the girl his brother was obsessed with. But it had messed with him. So he'd thrown himself into the role of irreverent friend, pretended to be into Natalie so he had something to complain to Bryce about. He'd suffered on the sidelines watching Connor tiptoe around Bryce for years. He'd never told Bryce that the reason why Connor had finally asked her out that night was because Ethan had told him to shit or get off the pot. Not in those terms, and he'd said it without raising his brother's suspicions, as he'd always done when talking about Bryce. But he'd had it. Had just had it with his brother hesitating while Bryce dated a string of losers. If Connor didn't step up to the line, then Ethan had decided he'd finally come forward, take a gamble, and see if that spark between them might lead somewhere. But Bryce had said yes to Connor, and then Connor had died. And while Connor was being murdered, she'd been fucking someone else in the White Raven bathroom. Ethan had no idea how there wasn't some black hole where he'd been standing the moment he'd found out about that night. That was how hard he'd imploded, like the star he'd been gave the fuck up and bailed.
Ethan leaned back against the bench, sighing. These last few days, he'd felt like he was poking his head out of that black hole. Now this bullshit about Connor and the pack's souls being fed into the dead gate threatened to pull him back in. He knew Bryce was pissed about it, upset, but she had Athalar now. And no part of Ethan resented them for it. No, that history was behind him. But he didn't know what to do with himself when he spoke to her. The girl he'd been so convinced would be his wife and mate and mother to his kids. How many times had he allowed himself to picture that future? Him and Bryce opening presents with their children on winter solstice eve, traveling the world together while he played sunball, laughing and growing old in this city, their friends around them. He was glad to not be living in her apartment anymore. He'd had nowhere else to go after Sabine and Amelie had kicked him out, and he sure as fuck wasn't planning to stage any kind of coup with her, as Sabine seemed to fear. But he was grateful Rune had offered him a place to stay instead. A little early, isn't it? Therian called from the river, and Ethan stood from the bench to find the mare treading water, powerful fins swirling beneath him. Ethan didn't bother with pleasantries.
Can you get me to the bone quarter?
Therian blinked.
No, unless you want to be eaten.
Just get me to the shore.
I can't. Not if I don't want to be eaten either. The river beasts will attack.
Ethan crossed his arms.
I have to find my brother, see if he's okay.
He hated the pity that softened Therian's face.
I don't see what you can do either way, if he's fine or if he's not.
Ethan's throat dried out.
I need to know. Swim me past the sleeping city and I'll see if I can glimpse him.
Again, river beasts, so no.
Therian slicked back his hair.
But I need to find that kid, if he's not in the sleeping city. Maybe we can kill two birds with one stone.
Ethan angled his head.
Any idea where to look instead?
No, so I desperately need a hint in the right direction.
Ethan frowned.
What do you have in mind?
You're not going to like it. Neither is Bryce.
Why does she need to be involved?
Ethan couldn't stop his voice from sharpening.
Because I know Legs, and I know she'll want to come.
Not if we don't tell her.
Oh, I'm going to tell her. I like my balls where they are.
Therian grinned and jerked his chin to the city behind Ethan.
Go get some money.
Gold marks, not credit.
Tell me where we're going.
Somewhere shady, no doubt. Therian's eyes darkened.
To the Mystics.
Chapter 37. Keep holding, hold, hold, Madame Kira chanted, and Bryce's left leg shook with the effort of keeping her right leg aloft and in place. Beside her, Juniper sweated along, face set with focused determination. June held perfect form, no hunched shoulders, no curved spine. Every line of her friend's body radiated strength and grace.
And down into first position, the instructor ordered over the thumping music.
Totally not the style that ballet was usually danced to. But that was why Bryce loved this class. It combined the formal, precise movements of ballet with dance club hits. And somehow, in doing so, it helped her understand both the movements and the sound better, merge them better, let her enjoy it, rather than dance along to music she'd once loved and daydreamed about getting to perform on stage. Wrong body type had no place here, in this bright studio on an artsy block of the old square.
Take a 5-minute breather, said Madame Kira,
a dark-haired swan shifter, striding to the chair by the wall of mirrors to swig from her water bottle. Bryce wobbled over to her pile of crap by the opposite wall, ducking under the bar to pick up her phone. No messages. A blissfully quiet morning, exactly what she'd needed. Which was why she'd come here. Beyond wanting to come here twice a week, she needed to be here today, to work out every swirling thought. She hadn't told Juniper what she'd learned.
What could she say?
Hey, just FYI, the bone quarter is a lie, and I'm pretty sure there's no such thing as a true afterlife, because we all get turned into energy and herded through the dead gate, though some small bit of us gets shoved down the gullet of the Underking, so good fucking luck.
But Juniper was frowning at her own phone as she drank a few sips from her water bottle.
What's up?
Bryce asked between pants. Her legs shook, simply standing still. Juniper tossed her phone onto her duffel bag.
Corinne Lescaut got tapped to be principal.
Bryce's mouth dropped open.
I know,
Juniper said, reading the unspoken outrage on Bryce's face. Corinne had entered the company 2 years ago, had only been a soloist for this season, and the CCB had claimed it wasn't promoting anyone this year. This is definitely a fuck you, Bryce seethed. June's throat bobbed, and Bryce's fingers curled, as if she could rip the face off of every director and board member of the CCB for putting that pain there.
They're too afraid to fire me, because the shows where I'm a soloist always bring in a crowd. But they'll do what they can to punish me, June said.
All because you told a bunch of rich jerks that they were being elitist monsters?
I might bring in money for the shows, but those rich jerks donate millions.
The fawn drained her water.
I'm going to stick it out until they have to promote me.
Bryce tapped her foot on the pale wood floor.
I'm sorry, June.
Her friend squared her shoulders with a quiet dignity that cracked Bryce's heart.
I do this because I love it, she said,
as Kira summoned the class back into their lines.
They're not worth my anger. I have to keep remembering that.
She tucked a stray curl back into her bun.
Any word about that kid?
Bryce shook her head. Nope. She'd leave it at that. Kira started the music, and they got back into position. Bryce sweated and grunted through the rest of the class, but Juniper had become razor-focused. Every movement precise and flawless, her gaze fixed on the mirror as if she battled herself. That expression didn't alter, even when Kira asked June to demonstrate a perfect series of 32 fuetes, spins on one foot, for the class. Juniper whipped around like the wind itself propelled her, her grounding hoof not straying 1 inch from its starting point. Perfect form, a perfect dancer, yet it wasn't enough. Juniper left class almost as soon as it had finished, not lingering to chat like she usually did. Bryce let her go and waited until most of the class had filtered out, before approaching Kira by the mirror, where the instructor was panting softly.
Did you see the news about Corinne?
Kira tugged on a loose pink sweatshirt against the chill of the dance studio. Even though she hadn't danced on CCB's stage in years, the instructor remained in peak form.
You seem surprised. I'm not.
You can't say anything? You were one of CCB's prized dancers, and now one of their best instructors when she wasn't teaching her outside classes. Kira frowned.